Hello and welcome to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And Scott, you're not going to believe it.
What's that?
We have two hosts and a guest.
We do.
We do. We have a guest. I don't know. Say something, Paul. I can tell
you. Test.
Oh, yes, you're on the air. Looky there. Tell you what. Test is here. So his name is Test. He is the golf superintendent at the Furman Golf Club, the home of the Paladins. So I will confess, he does not bleed orange if you cut him, but he does bleed purple. So he's got half the color right. Right, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Got a good basketball team.
They do.
So, Paul Brandenburg, welcome to the Yard Pro Show. Class A superintendent. I'm going to say that a lot, so we'll garner a lot of folks. Class A superintendent, past president of the Upstate
Certified Superintendent
Carolinas, even. Or the Upstate Turfgrass Association. So you give a lot back, I know, to the turf industry when it comes to the association. We appreciate that.
Been involved for many years.
And Paul has had a desire, Scott, to come on the show for quite a while.
You said that.
So we kind of cornered him. We had our annual Upstate Oyster Roast, kind of a little Christmas party. We all get together and have a good time, nice social event this week. And somehow or another, I cornered him. His lovely wife was there and said, oh, yeah, honey, you need to do that. So live on the air. I cannot believe it. So we have a turf guru in the house. That's what we're going to call him, right?
Turf guru.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
You'll take it?
Much worse.
So how are things at Furman?
They're going very well, very well. We have a new maintenance facility.
I know.
We've been trying to get that for many years. Recently moved in. Very happy about that. But other than that, it's winter activities.
So it's cold and wet.
Cold and wet. Getting really cold and snowy and icy.
Yeah.
in fact, the golf course is closed today, closed tomorrow, probably closed Monday.
Wow. So, wow. It's you know, Heidi and I were talking about that yesterday. We were just amazed yesterday afternoon at how many people are already closing things. Anticipation of bad weather. And we're like, you know, what's up with this? Who would just make a decision? Now I know it's Paul.
Now, we were busy yesterday.
I think we'll just close the golf course, you know. I'm sure the people that want to play today, that's the scary thing.
Well,
they're not playing at Furman.
I think Thornblade's open.
So. Yeah. That's about the only one. I think most golf courses around the upstate have closed. So you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show, folks. It's a delight to be here, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week. It's very simple at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. The text line are open. We would love to hear from you. We are celebrating tomorrow, the second Sunday of Advent. So we are in the depths of the Christmas season. We have an impending, threatening, some type of wintry mixed storm. I mean, it depends on what, you know, weather outlet you read. I mean, it, you know, a possibility of some winter snow, but expect 3 to 8 inches. But possibly, we're not sure. But it's 100% chance. I mean, it's like in one paragraph, they give you 14 different scenarios. Who knows what we'll get from the 85 corridor? Seems like 85 north, it's going to be worse than it is certainly from 85 south. But what we do know, it's going to be cold. It's going to be wet. For several days, seems like through Monday. It's going to be cold. It's going to be wet. So I'm sure many of you are having your cup of joe this morning and chilling out, and hopefully you're tuned into the Yard Pro Show because we have a lot of great information as usual, and we have our superstar turf guru, Paul Brandenburg, on there, you know, Class A superintendent. He said, I can't say that enough, you know. And I'm sure he's got a lot of friends that would like to call in this morning as well. Don't you think?
I'm sure.
So phone lines are open, 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. Hopefully we'll get some phone calls. If not, then this may be two visits and two appearances for Paul, his first and last, because that could lead to or maybe let us know that perhaps he's just not the person we need here because nobody wants to call in. I don't know. So somebody for you know, please help Paul out because we'd like to have him back again one day, maybe. I mean, it's early in the show. We hadn't decided yet. He's still being interviewed for this really high-paying volunteer, come-see-me position, and can you help me out when we're out of town and come on the air. But, Scott,
yes.
More importantly, what do we talk about a lot at the beginning of almost every show?
I see it sitting over there.
Oh, no, you can't see it yet.
Oh, too late. It's over.
But, you know, hey, we've talked a lot about this through the fall of the year. It's kind of compare and contrast where we are now to where we were this time last year. What are the current weather conditions? All that good jazz. And, you know, it's obvious. I mean, if you don't know that there's some inclement weather coming or some rain coming, I mean, they've done nothing but talk about this forever. So you must live under a rock if you're not aware. But, you know, it's wet, it's cold. But thinking about wet stuff, what is it time for?
The drought report.
It is that weekly U.S. Drought Monitor report update for the state of South Carolina for the week of December the 4th. Give us a drum roll. Where are we? Oh, wow. I can't believe it, Scott. Currently, only 2.25% of this state is under drought. Only 2.25%. So 97.75% of this state is drought-free. Now, I wish I had a little, like, hooray or something, you know, that we could do. Sound effect, because this is pretty amazing. This time last year, let's see, where is it? 1 year ago, nearly 70% of our state was under drought, some form. So a little wee bit, looks like it's still down there around that Savannah, Georgia border, maybe Hampton County. I can't remember. You know, it's been a long time since I had South Carolina history and memorized the county map of the state. I don't know if I ever had to memorize
that.
How
long ago was that?
Oh, man, it was, you know, it was only like 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've only been out of high school like 10 years. That's what I keep telling myself. At least it feels that way, right? Because it goes faster and faster.
Go with it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think we're sitting in a great shape, even with cold weather coming. Paul, talked with several superintendents this week, and, you know, growing Ultra Dwarf Bermuda, that's one thing that y'all always combat is covering greens when it gets really cold. Right. And I think a lot of people feel like, well, it's so cold, you know, in your industry, I think the average homeowner, the layman person thinks, well, it's ice, it's snow, I bet you're covering greens. Nah.
Nope.
It kind of buffers temperature, right?
And correct. In fact, we've had one covered for a couple of days this week, and we uncovered it for this weekend, for this event.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, we were pretty dry. You know, since last weekend up until Thursday, yesterday, we'd done a little grow-in on this particular green and trying to keep the soil temperatures up. So we covered it. It's a black cover.
Yeah.
You can actually raise those temperatures a little bit if you've got a black cover over it. But before we left yesterday, we uncovered that green.
Yeah, because you know that a little blanket of snow and ice is going to insulate you.
Yep. Snow actually has a small percentage of nitrogen in it.
That's right.
So it would not surprise us to go back on Monday or Tuesday when and actually the turf will probably be a little bit greener.
Wow. Yeah, and you know, that's what's interesting. When you deal with your home lawn, you don't always see those little changes where a little bit of nitrogen, you really can't see the result. If you're mowing your lawn 2 inches, 3-inch mowing height, you can't see those little changes from a little bit of added nutrient. But when you get on a golf green that's on a sand base, that's
right.
Part of the reason.
Yeah.
Plus, you're mowing that grass well below a desired height that the grass wants to grow.
Right.
Now, not below a desired height that a golfer wants it. We know that because they would just assume have dirt, I feel like, some days. You know, the faster the better, right? But when you're maintaining that grass, even at the mowing height you're mowing at, even though that grass was bred for a golf green, you're still maintaining it lower than what the grass naturally wants to grow. And when you're putting the grass under that much stress, you're growing on a straight sand base, the smallest amount of nutrient that you add to it, it's amazing how quickly you can see the result.
Well, and moisture also. Going back talking about the drought, you know, when you're mowing turf at a tenth of an inch, you know, 100, 110, 120, you see everything. You see traffic patterns. You see the moisture patterns. You see the nutrients, wear and tear. In any change in temperature, change in moisture, you're going to see changes, and you have to manage that.
Exactly. So we're going to talk a good bit, folks, today, and certainly you can call us in. The phone lines are open at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And text us at 713-007. We would certainly love to hear from you. You know, Scott, I'm going to refresh this little text line here just to see. Maybe we got something. Nope, we didn't. So text lines are up at 713-007. Paul, we're getting ready to go to the phone lines. And I will say this. We're going to go to the phone lines, and if we have a little break, one thing I want to get to as well, I kind of skipped over it. You know, 'tis the season, Scott. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about maybe kind of the history of the Christmas tree, some tips of keeping that Christmas tree alive. And I think this is fitting, too. I thought we might talk a little bit about ice melt. What do you say about that? Okay. Ooh, put your thinking caps
that
on.
That you can't buy any right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's all gone, but, you know, if you can find a bag here and there, great. But before we do that, Paul, you have someone that saved you. Chuck from Bowling Springs has decided to call in today and save Paul, so we know Paul's not a bad omen. Hello, Chuck, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show. Hey, Chuck, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Now we got you. How are things going up in Bowling Springs?
Yeah, doing pretty good. It's pretty cold out there, but not too bad yet.
Yeah, a little white stuff coming your way, I'm sure, late tonight and tomorrow morning, correct?
Yeah, that's what they say. So, batting down the hatches.
Yeah, exactly. I hope you have your bread and milk by now.
Oh, yeah. Got everything I need.
So what can we help you with? It's been a while since you've called in, so I would like the other listeners to know that you have been in the past a regular caller, so it's good to hear from you again.
Yeah, it's been about a year, I think, but I've been listening. I just haven't had any issues to talk to you about. But I've got a situation now that involves a tree, the lawn, and my garden all at the same time. But I've been in this house about 10 years, and when we moved in, we had a Chinese elm tree. It was small enough that it was held up by burlap straps. Well, 10 years later, the thing is 25, 30 feet tall, and it's started to spread out kind of on my garden, and the lawn is pretty weak underneath it. And this past year, I had 6 tomato plants, and they produced 4 tomatoes. So I can do something. I can either cut the tree down or move the garden or aerate the lawn or something.
Shade is the problem, I suspect.
Yeah, I would suspect shade is the problem. So, and that it sounds like that's what you suspect, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're looking for advice for what we do?
Yeah, I did cut some of the limbs that were starting to reach over the garden area, but I can only get so high, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. You know, and a lot of times it's not just shade; it can also be air movement, especially when we're talking about turf quality. So we may find that lawns can tolerate a little bit more shaded times at certain times of the day if we increase the air movement. So if we
what kind of grass is it? What kind of grass are you growing on your lawn?
Bermuda,
yeah. Yeah. So it will not like that tree at all. Especially, it was probably great 10 years ago, but in the 10 years, that tree's grown a lot. And depending on where it is in relation to your garden or your lawn, the tree itself, you may have cut the amount of sunlight by 30%, 50%, 60% the last 10 years. And
yeah,
Bermuda just won't grow.
Yeah, just not going to happen. And that's one of the things when you plant in the landscape, sometimes you don't think about what is it going to be like in 10 years and 15 years and 20 years. So if you're not having success and you've limbed it up as high as you can reach and you're still not having success capturing enough sunlight, especially with Bermuda, it's going to be more about sun than anything. The same with tomatoes in the garden. If you're casting that shade in the middle of the day, it's not going to work. Now, here's my question, Chuck. Is there anyone in the household that's really attached to the tree, you know, other than yourself?
No.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, if they were, then you could always have them go away for a day of shopping or whatnot, and, you know, they get back, say, you know, sorry, honey, the tree died. It had Husqvarna erraticus, and we had to take it out, you know. Just make up a name. But and you hate to say that. I mean, trust me, I like a tree, right, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
And I do love a tree. But sometimes you got to make that decision. What's more important to me? Is it more important that I have a garden and I have a lawn back here? Now, you could look for alternatives of landscaping instead of growing turf underneath that tree. You could figure out, and it's hard to say without being there looking at the property, but you could maybe turn that into a bed. And if you still wanted that grass effect, you could plant it out with some liriope or mondo grass or something. You know, a ground cover that mimics a grass. Then it looks more like Paul's golf course, where you have like a rough height, the higher height.
Or you could change turf varieties. You could stop if it's especially if you've got some shade back there, you could change over to fescue or a blend of fescue and bluegrass. And can you move the garden? How big is the garden?
It's 8x8. It's a planter box, 8x8.
Okay, you could absolutely move that to a different part of your. I would take a good look at, you know, go out different parts of the day and see what parts of your lawn are getting sun most of the day. And mm-hmm. maybe move your planter over there, and how much grass are you growing? It sounds like it's maybe a smaller backyard.
Well, the total lawn is about 5,000 square feet.
Yeah. Okay.
So about half of that, I guess.
Okay. That's five pallets of sod from Carolina Fresh.
Yeah, you're right. And one thing you could think about that blends in well from a textural standpoint and even a color standpoint is Royal Zoysia. We'll tolerate some shade in that, and it seems once it's established, Chuck, it seems to be extremely shade tolerant. You know,
definitely talking about putting some mulch up around the base of the tree if you're going to keep the tree.
Yeah, if you're going to keep the tree,
I wouldn't
get
cut
away
the tree
from.
Down just for an 8x8 garden. I would move the garden and experiment somewhere else.
Yep, because trees are worth having.
Absolutely, you don't see a whole lot of elm trees, honestly.
Yeah, no. the other thing that it has a very small leaf. And it drops leaves in little tiny seed pods, but they get down in the grass. It's very difficult to pick them up. But, like, I have a maple tree in front, and I can run the mower with the bag over it a couple of times and pick up all the leaves. But this stuff gets way down at the base of the grass and very difficult to pick up.
So it sounds like we're in a situation here, Chuck. We're in a situation here. Paul wants you to keep the tree, and you really want to get rid of the tree. I mean, you're talking yourself into it because now you don't like the leaf litter, right? but I will agree with Paul, and what Paul says is we're talking about an 8x8 raised garden. I know it's aggravating to move it. Winter's a great time to make plans for the spring and summer. Winter's a great time to pick up the forms and wheelbear all the soil over, move this to a new location in the garden. And you do have a solution with Royal Zoysia or something. A fine-bladed Zoysia will blend in with that Bermuda that's on the other side of the tree that grows in the sun. Yes, you're going to see a line of different turf varieties at some point in the year. When it goes dormant, you may see a little different shade and color. But I'll be honest with you, when those two grasses kind of merge and grow and co-mingle together on that planted line over the next 3 to 4 years, it's really not going to be. You may always notice it because it's your lawn, Chuck. It's your domain. But trust me, when friends and family come over, they'll never think twice about it. So that's always an option.
Well, it sounds like moving the garden might be a good idea because it's built up with treated
lumber.
Timbers. Yeah, and it right now those timbers they're like sponges. Rotting through, and it's time to replace them anyway.
So that'd be a good solution for you, and then you get the benefit of both, because I will side with Paul and say, you know, an elm tree is a beautiful tree, and especially the Chinese elms. They hold a nice shape. It is a very nice landscape planting. A lot of times people ask for tree recommendation. I've recommended those a lot over the years because they grow well, and they just maintain a nice shape. But it has it's kind of overgrown its area. That's what it does. It's going to grow, and it's gotten bigger than what you anticipated, and adjust from there. So,
yeah, my son told me when before it got really big, he said, "You need to be trimming that tree back." And I said, "Well, I like the tree." Now he says, "I told you so."
So if you like the tree, salvage it. Move the garden. And look into the Royal Zoysia to get some grass growing.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. Thanks for the help.
Thanks, Chuck. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye. You know, great solution there. Sorry, I hit the lockout button, apparently, if you hit it twice. Great solution there. So that's why we have Paul in the house today, right?
Correct.
At Paul trying to salvage a tree.
No, trying to sell some of your sod.
Yeah, there you go. Paul's looking for kudos, I think. You know, we do not pay commission, Paul. Sorry.
Well, I've cut a lot of trees down in my time. And
you cut
the ones that are really hurting your turf or hurting your
But
project.
At the same token, on a golf course, and I've seen it, it's not just you, it's other superintendents, if you have a specimen beautiful tree, you try everything possible to salvage that tree.
Well, and you need to manage it. You know, it needs to be
exactly.
pruned, needs to be fertilized, it needs to probably have mulch around the bottom of it. Working at a place like Furman, we have hundreds of them, if not thousands, and you try to take care of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's very important, just like your turf.
So, guys, I have a couple of text questions that have come in. Good morning. I planted some small crepe myrtles this spring, but I wanted to move them. Can I do this now? Also, can I heavily trim my abelias now? Yeah, I mean, I don't see a problem. I mean, winter's here. I mean, soil temperatures really cooled off. Daylight hours are short. Everything slowed down. Crepe myrtles dropped leaves a month and a half ago. Go ahead and move them. Dig the root ball.
The sooner the better.
The sooner the better. Dig the root ball as large as you can. Put a little bit of fertilizer in when you do it. Nice, complete fertilizer, slow release. Something like a triple 14 wood ace that we sell at the stores is a great example. Something that's really slow release, has a little micro elements, well balanced, where all numbers are the same. Because we know when that tree, when you do that, you're damaging the roots. We want to get it off to a good start, especially when the soils begin to warm in the spring. As far as cutting the abelias, I say, heck yeah, man. You can't kill an abelia. I mean, they're getting a little hairy and a little unwielding. You may actually, if you're in the upstate, you may actually want to try to trim some of those abelias back before this possible ice storm comes, because that's just going to help the plant from laying over as much. The less leaf surface or the less stem surface we have there, the less weight the plant's going to have to carry, right?
Correct.
So those who normally see a lot of damage on trees when it ices and shrubs when it ices are ones that maybe haven't been maintaining the plant as diligently because you have more surface. It's overgrown. You got more surface for things to attach. Same with, you know, the old Bradford pears with the wind.
I've cut a bunch of those down.
You know? But it's a wind sail. If you keep the canopy thin and you prune them every year and thin the canopy out, the wind will blow through it. Make it look like Swiss cheese, okay, folks? Wind will blow through it. Same thing in an ice storm. Less leaf surface, less stem surface we have there for ice attached to, the less weight it has to carry. But we'll talk about it when we come back from the bottom of the break a little bit about suspected tree damage in this, because I think it's going to happen, especially with the wet soils that we have had. Folks, you are tuned in to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. We have a couple texts we'll get to, Paul, when we come back. One says,
wonderful.
What kind of grass do you use on the golf course? You got to think about that. It might stump you, you know.
I'm going to work on that one.
We got some text that we'll talk about when we come back. We'll talk a little bit about the Christmas tree. And as always, the phone lines are open. Tis the season. Let's light it up like a Christmas tree. 1-800-347-1063. We'll talk to you in a few. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Very simple to find us during the week. You're back for part two, and during the week you can find us at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail locations, their hours, and all that good jazz. They're open today. We'll have to check Monday.
Selling ice melt?
I think. I believe we are selling some ice melt. It's good. You bring up a good point. So, folks, I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And?
Paul Brandenburg.
We have our good friend Paul Brandenburg, Class A Golf Superintendent from Furman Golf Club. He does bleed purple. He's neutral. Right?
Citadel, not really.
I will say this, though. Citadel grad.
Citadel grad.
Kudos.
NC State grad.
Kudos to you. So, Citadel and NC State.
Correct.
Wow. 2 degrees. Well, we might as well just pack up our stuff and go home.
Scott. I'll take over.
Yeah, we'll just let Paul have it. That's why.
Sleeping in next Saturday.
I'm telling you, he's mentioned several times he wants to come on the air, and I'm like, no, because he'll take over my position. I don't need that. What am I going to do? You know?
Continue to talk.
That's right. I have the gift of gab. Paul has. He is the turf guru.
Let's talk some turf.
So we're going to go because he's been waiting patiently. Since the bottom of the hour break, Glenn has found us at 1-800-347-1063, has a question. Now, first caller, you talked him into saving his tree. I want to see how you handle this call.
All right.
Hello, Glenn, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Yes, I was wondering, is there any way to get rid of sweet gum balls on a mature tree?
Okay, Paul, let's go for this. You like to save trees?
To the best of my ability, the answer to that is no.
Well, there's a way to rid the lawn of sweet gum.
Right. Yeah, if cutting the tree down is an option, then that's your option.
I've got about 25 of them, though.
Oh, wow.
I've heard there's a chemical that you can put in the trunk of the tree. You can bore little holes and put in them at a certain time of year, and I was didn't know if there was any truth in that or not.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar either. And, you know, one of my neighbors and has been a guest on the show many times, and I think we've actually had this discussion, is Scott Carlson with Snyder Tree Care. And in the upstate, they're one of the best as far as keeping up with technologies and modern technologies.
Right. And they do quite a bit of work at Furman for us.
And those guys, Scott and I always joke because my old comeback over the years on the radio show was just infect the tree. It's a genus and species called Husqvarna erraticus. So buy Husqvarna and eradicate the tree. And the thing is, and we were talking the bottom of the hour break because we do get prompted to know your call and or know that you're on that waiting on hold. We kind of know what your question is. One of the things is that they do add a little bit of value because it's a beautiful tree in the fall. The foliage, when it turns, is really nice. But they have this annoying fruiting body that once it sends out the seeds, man, the little fruiting body drops and it is just a mess.
If you can get rid of one or two at a time and replace them. We've done that at Furman. In fact, between the third and the fourth hole, when I got there in 1999, we had 16 sweet gum trees that had been planted in a straight line. And
oh my.
And so we over about a 6 or 7 year period, we just cut down 2 or 3 a year and popped a pine tree in there and in an irregular pattern so it looks more natural in the landscape. Nothing worse than somebody come in and plant 10 or 12 trees in a straight line. That doesn't look natural at all. All
right, hold on just a minute, okay? I apologize, Glenn. I got to address Paul because I got a question.
All right.
Who in the world would voluntarily plant 16 sweet gum trees in a straight line?
That happened before my time.
Wow.
Yep.
I've never heard of anybody saying that.
You can go to Furman and ride around, and you can look at a bunch of areas where trees were planted in a straight line, like the mall.
Yeah, exactly.
And, every single one of those trees is actually coming out right now. Scott Carlson's involved with that. And being replaced.
And part of that, Glenn, and I think something you take away, whether you plant it, and it was our first caller, Chuck, first half of the show, whether you plant it yourself, whether it was native and volunteered and grew there, unfortunately, when trees mature, sometimes they mature in the wrong place. Sometimes it's the wrong variety or species in your situation where you are faced with, hey, my best solution here is to contract a tree company, or if you feel young and able, buy a chainsaw. Just be careful. Probably the most dangerous thing. Paul, wouldn't you say that's the most dangerous thing you do on a golf course is cut trees?
Certainly. In fact, we're strongly encouraged to not cut them. We contract out a lot of our
work. Mine are all around my house and stuff, and
they were there before the house was probably.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So you got to.
Okay, you answered my question.
All right. You have a great weekend and Merry Christmas to you.
All right. Thank you. Same to y'all.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Scott, good call. Great call. And the good thing is we have a little bit of time here. We can go back to these text lines. So, how short should Bermuda grass be cut this time of the year?
Well, certainly no shorter than you cut it all summer and into the fall. That would be a huge mistake, would be to go out there and cut it.
Lower at this point.
It depends. If you cut it at an inch all summer into the fall, then cut it at an inch and a quarter. Set your mower up a couple clicks and pick up some leaves. And it's okay to top it off this time of year because it's going to grow slightly when we have those 60-degree weeks and have some sunny weeks.
Yep.
You can top it off.
Well, and it's one of those things, too, when you do go in there, you can clean it up once a week, once every 2 weeks, run a mower over it, like you said. Not only a little bit of growth, but just the chaff from the plant going dormant. It'll help collect or get rid of some of that chaff, grind it up. If you're bagging, it'll collect it, get it out of the lawn, neaten it up, freshen it up. But I would not cut it lower than what I maintained it when it went dormant. Now, once we have warm soil temperatures and things begin to transition in spring, and once we get about 50-60% green and we are done with all threats of frost, that's when you may want to go in. If you're maintaining it an inch and a half, you may want to go in and drop it to an inch so that you're regrowing leaf tissue and not stem tissue, because we don't want to keep increasing the height of stem tissue, because then you only mow it once a week as a homeowner, and that's when you get the white look after you mow. Nobody likes the white look after you mow your Bermuda.
Turf 101, don't cut off more than a third of it.
That's right.
So, pretty simple plan. If you were at an inch and a half, then, yes, certainly don't cut off more than a third of it.
So maintain it at whatever height you were maintaining it prior to going dormant. What kind of grass do you use on the golf course? Now, you know, we're going to let Paul talk about it.
At Furman, 99% of it is Bermuda grass. We do have quite a bit of zoysia on some tees. Bought quite a bit of zoysia over the years for tee boxes, but certainly tees in the shade. Our putting greens are also Bermuda grass. It's ultra dwarf Bermuda grass. We do have one bent grass green at Furman. It's at our college practice facility. The college teams need to practice on both surfaces because they're playing tournaments on both surfaces. You know, most golf courses around here are Bermuda grass. Quite a few zoysia courses.
Yep.
And there's still quite a bit of creeping bent grass on some greens, Thornblade, Greenville Country Club, Willow Creek. So there is still some variety out there.
But even a golf course, if you're growing in, you know, our footprint of a radio show was in the Carolina or South Carolina. And all across South Carolina, not as prevalent. I mean, years ago, though, it was prevalent. They were growing some bent grass greens, cool season grasses on greens, and even in the Myrtle Beach area, Polly's Island, that area. But most golf courses, I'd say the majority of them are mostly the fairways, the roughs, are probably hybrid 419 Bermuda, the same Bermuda that we sell as Bermuda for your front yard.
It's been out there for 25, 30 years.
Great grass. You know, because it repairs itself so quickly. Now, it has its problems. Probably not the most drought tolerant. It's one of the first to show symptoms of drought. You got to give it ample water if you want to keep it solid green in the summer if we hit a drought. But very tough grass. But golf courses still have, believe it or not, you're still managing some cool season, not just with you on the bent grass, but a lot of them still managing some cool season in those areas that are under trees where they have to grow fescue in the upstate.
Right.
Because it's either I can grow some and struggle with some cool season grass, or we can have dirt, or we can have mulch. And most golfers don't prefer to play off of a mulch bed. Just doesn't work out well. So they'd rather play off the turf. But most of it's Bermuda grass. I mean, I know your course is, other than some zoysia tees, predominantly Bermuda grass.
Yeah, and we've planted some cool seasons, some shade mix. The last couple of years, we're experimenting with some of that, again, under the trees. Again, if you've been planting trees for the last 20 or 30 years, they're growing larger. The root zone is encroaching into the playing areas. If you don't have irrigation in those edge areas, like it's either hard pan or mulch, and you try to grow grass in there.
Yeah, so. And, you know, I just gotta laugh. Glenn, if you're still listening, you know, or a caller about the sweet gum tree, I got a text. Just gotta love it. Gotta love it. We don't call them listeners anymore. We call them participants. Glenn's a participant because he participated today. We have a participant, Glenn, that make a suggestion to you. If you cut down your sweet gum tree, be sure to replant it with a Bradford pear.
Oh, my goodness. That is a terrible
idea. You gotta love that, don't you? So, I made that little comment about the Bradford pears. I mean, you know, I understand why people, you know, honestly, they have beautiful foliage in the fall. They do have blooms in the spring. Now, depending on where you're, really everywhere in the state, they bloom for about 2 days, and then we get a frost or freeze.
They're pollinated by flies. I mean, literally, they're pollinated by maggots.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, terrible tree. They should all be cut down.
Mm-hmm. So, we don't have to worry about cutting down most of them because within about 10 or 15 years when they begin to mature out, normally a big thunderstorm comes along and it takes care of the tree.
Guaranteed to have a bunch of them splitting in the next 3 or 4
days. Other than my front yard, I have one that's just in this little microclimate where it never gets the brunt of the wind in any thunderstorm. And
you still have a Bradford pear?
Yes, yes.
I've still got some red tips at the golf course, believe it or not.
Well, you know, if you don't prune them, and you're not messing with them, and don't open and expose them with open wounds from pruning, typically we don't see the Entomosporium leaf spot. I mean, you may get a little bit, but it never really spreads. And if you don't touch them, that plant would still be here today. The problem is everybody planted them in an area that they couldn't grow naturally, so they go in and shear them 14 times a year because they grow so quick.
Right.
and really some old mature red tips. If they're in the right place,
they look pretty good.
They're pretty good looking plants. Mm-hmm. They really are. So let's see here. I think I had another text. Where's that one? Maybe I don't. Good morning. I think we have cleared out the text line. So the text lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. If not, we will bore you to death about all the different nitrogen sources and how they break down and react with grasses. Paul's
not going to talk about that.
You've got something better over there.
Text lines are open, 1-800. I mean, phone lines are 1-800-347-1063. They are open as well. Text line 71307. But in the meantime, let's talk a little bit about this little thing we bring into our house that our house cat kind of goes nuts over. She'll just sit there and stare at it. And she loves the outdoors. She uses the doggy door, goes in and out all she wants. She will sit there and stare at it as to why is there a tree growing through the floor of our living room and just stares at it and the little bird ornaments. You know, there's some interesting things. Anybody really know the history of the Christmas tree?
I'm sure you're going to enlighten us.
So nobody knows the history of the Christmas tree.
Go ahead.
The legend is, huh? So the legend is the Protestant reformer Martin Luther in Germany, so we're talking early 1500s, was walking around the house one evening, and he noticed the tree. And through the tree, it was a starry night. He could see the stars and whatnot. And he said, hey, this is a great representation of what happens during the Christmas season for the birth of Jesus. And it's kind of like him coming to earth. He was supposedly one of the first to take the tree inside and adorn it with candles so that he could put this on display for his family and share what he saw. Yeah, that seems real safe, right?
Yeah.
Let's take a living tree.
He didn't have any lights.
Cut it down, and let's stick candles on the end. I'm sure there's nothing that can happen with this, but that is some of the legend and the lore and the history of the Christmas tree. So I know for us, we still cut a living tree. We have one living tree. We have a couple artificial trees.
You go out and cut it yourself?
We actually go out and cut it ourselves. We go up to the North Carolina mountains. We cut a nice tree. And no, I'm not telling you where I go. It's already inundated with people. I know they'll do that for you. It's the fun of the season with the family, right? I just like the mountains, Paul. What can I say, you know? It's always fun to have an excuse to ride down 6 miles down a gravel road in the middle of nowhere, right? At least I think so.
Sounds wonderful.
But, you know.
Use an axe?
No. Use a chainsaw. Come on, man. Come on.
Go the whole 9 yards.
So, what about caring for that living Christmas tree? You know, we're bringing the landscape indoors. It can be done. We have house plants and all that good stuff. But we're bringing a plant which grows somewhat natively in our neck of the woods, right? And we're bringing it indoors.
Well, it's not native to the indoors.
And that's right. It's not native to the. And we're going to stare at it for 4 weeks and hope it doesn't drop all of its needles.
It's not going
to
get any water.
Now,
not going to get any rain, you know, or sunlight.
That's right. So that tree is pretty simple. One of the biggest issues, and this is one of the things I do with my tree. Do y'all have living trees in your house?
Yes.
Yeah.
We sure do.
Okay.
We have a different tradition than you do, but we do have the living tree.
Do you go down to, like, Lowe's or?
No. Well, we drive down to Pelham Road and go to our favorite tree farm from Western North Carolina.
From Western North Carolina.
And purchase one of their trees.
And I actually go there and purchase some boughs that are cut off to use as greenery to decorate, like, the week before Christmas. But, no, it's wherever you get your tree. Like, you get your tree there. That tree was probably harvested. If you happened to buy a tree that was delivered that day, it was probably harvested 2 days prior,
right,
before it got to you, okay? But you may have gotten a tree that was delivered the weekend of Thanksgiving, and here you are 2 weeks later buying a tree. It could have been sitting on a lot, because what's interesting with Fraser firs, it's not really a needle. And the way the xylem phloem runs through that plant and that modified stem tissue, okay?
Man.
It stays attached.
Scientific.
Even after it dies, it stays attached because the xylem phloem runs from the stem tissue up around the top of the needle and back into the stem tissue. That's why it stays attached. So it's technically it's dead. And if it were like a needle on a pine tree, it would fall off. But on a Fraser fir, they won't. And they'll hold color for a long, long time. So it's kind of hard.
We all keep it for a month.
Exactly. But it's kind of hard to judge. Is this tree, how fresh is it? But what I can say is when you cut a tree, you cut anything, you cut a plant, and we've said this, we've had a lot of people over the years, Scott, call about using pruning paint You know, when I make a cut, should I seal it off printing paint? And the research has shown no. That's why you can't find printing paint much anymore. You should not do that because the tree or the plant naturally will callus itself, much like us having a scab if we skin ourselves, to protect it. The tree does the same thing immediately when you cut it. So when you do pick up a tree at a lot, when you get home, the first thing you should do is cut an inch off of the trunk. If you cut a tree like me living in the mountains of North Carolina, we drive an hour and a half home, I immediately, when I get home, pull it out of the truck, I cut an inch off the bottom, I stick it in a bucket of water until, because normally it's dark, until the next day when I take it inside. And before I take it inside, I normally cut another quarter inch off or adjust the height. But you've got to cut some off of the bottom of that tree. If not, it's calloused over and it'll never soak up water.
And they'll do that for you at places.
Yes.
Most of us are buying it. In fact, they almost insist on it.
They do. And the thing to remember, though, you've got to keep that moist from the second that you cut it, because within 20, 30 minutes, you know, it takes you 15 minutes to get home. Maybe it's another 2 hours till you put it in a stand and get water on it. It can callus over. So if you got a way to cut it, if not, if they're going to cut it for you at a lot, there's a simple solution. Take a damp rag with you and wrap it around the trunk so it's not exposed to air on the way home.
Mine sat in the garage for 24 hours, not in a bucket of water. So
yeah,
feeling pretty dumb right now.
So your tree's probably not taking up water now. I hope those needles hold on to Christmas.
A couple more weeks. It's going to make it. I'm
going to get one. Gotcha. So the other thing, too, make certain you don't put your tree right by the fireplace. Please don't do that. Not a good idea. You know, gas logs, real fire, doesn't matter.
Heaters,
don't put the tree right beside it. And if you have a heating vent where the tree is, no, cut it off. Okay? Let's use a little bit of common sense. It's a living entity. We want to make sure you have a safe and happy Christmas. But a little bit of history about the tree and a few tips. Oh, and use nothing but water. All these gimmicks, you know, let's give it Gatorade and all this stuff, put Sprite. No.
I've heard vodka.
Vodka.
Yes, maybe something about the alcohol as a preservative. I don't know.
Have
about
a holly
that.
Jolly Christmas. Christmas tree's got to get happy too, I guess, right?
You would hope so.
So, guys, what's going to happen with the weather?
I think we're in for some snow and ice.
Really?
Oh. And hopefully no loss of power.
All right. So, how do I get rid of holly bushes sprouting from my flower bed when large bushes were removed? Be consistent and pull them and pull them and pull them. Dig them out with a shovel.
Dig them out with a shovel.
I really want to get to this one last thing real quick. Hello, guys. I enjoyed the show. My question, is it best to apply ice melt before the storm or during or after the ice storm? Thanks, and please speak on the ice melt. The thing I really like to throw out there about ice melt, be careful. Read the label. Some ice melt over the years, because it's less expensive, is sodium chloride. That stuff will burn turf. It'll burn plants the whole nine yards. Read the bag. If it's sodium chloride, use it sparingly, and maybe just put it down the center of the walkway. Don't spread it into the lawn, please, okay?
I know at Furman we were putting it out yesterday and on a lot of walkways.
A lot of them are going to calcium. If you can find calcium chloride, probably what you all are buying is probably more calcium chloride. You actually have probably used some calcium chloride over the years to help some things. But if you do see injury from ice melt, if you're worried about it, you know, gypsum's a good thing to help neutralize salts. So you could always use a little gypsum on the backside in the spring. That should help neutralize those salts and help lessen some damage. But be safe. I'd say go early, especially if it's going to be more like an ice storm. I think you put it out early.
I would treat your driveway, treat your walkway, anywhere.
Treat it early. I mean, I was on 85 yesterday, and they'd already brined the which I still don't understand, though, because we're calling for an inch of rain before the snowstorm. It seems like it'd wash away. But late this evening before I go to bed, or turn in before it begins to snow and ice, I'd probably sling a little bit. Once the rain dies down a bit, I'd sling a little bit of ice melt. Or if you're doing the ice melt, the granular product, go ahead and put it out now. The rain will help dissolve it, give you a little bit of that chloride. Hopefully it's calcium chloride. So, Scott, let's go to the phone lines. We have Ted in Powdersville. Hello, Ted, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Thank you. I have a neighbor who has an area of woods in front of his lawn, gently sloping. He's been told not to burn the leaves. I mean, to burn the leaves and not leave them alone, that they'll make the soil too acidic. But I say, what about the woods?
Yeah, I think it depends on the variety of tree as to how acidic it's going to make the soil.
Well, they're mostly red oaks and some white oaks.
I really have no knowledge of decaying red oak or white oak leaves acidifying the soil any more than what they are. Now, I know, a pine forest typically, because the pine needle drop tends to have more acidic soils. But I don't know if that's really as much from the pine forest, or it's more acidic because typically pine forest are in red clay soils and just natural fat. I don't.
And maybe grind them up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd mulch them up if possible.
I'd mulch them up and just let them naturally decay if it were me. And, you know, if you're worried about where they're growing and what they're doing to the soil, the acidity, then do a soil test and see where you stand, because that can be corrected fairly easily and quickly now with some of the new lime products that are out there.
Right. I concur.
All right. Well, Ted, you have a great weekend, and we appreciate it.
You all stay warm.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are going to try to stay warm. You know, we do have one last caller, but we really don't have time. Rick and Duncan, if you will hold on, I will promise you that we will stay after the show and pick up the phone line and talk to you personally. How about that? You like that? We might even put you on speaker and let you talk to all three of us. So, folks, you have been listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week. It's very simple at www.carolinafreshfarms.com. We would love to hear from you. Paul, I want to say thank you. I hope you enjoyed it.
You're welcome.
You coming back?
Sure.
We got callers today. I guess we can invite you back, right?
Let's talk Saturday. Talk some turf.
Next Saturday, 9 o'clock. We'll see.
Maybe that might Paul. That might be tough. I'll be at the golf course in the morning.
Well, this is work. Hey, I will put a quick plug in for Furman Golf Club. One thing I saw interesting, but down to 20 seconds, but I will say this. I was cruising the website. Y'all have a neat concept of selling annual passes.
Yes.
So, folks, if you haven't been there, if you haven't gone out and played it, it's great golf course, fun golf, always in impeccable shape. And, hey, you can take home an annual pass. So look them up, Furman Golf Club on the Internet. You've been listening to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh.